Welcome to Veterans Connected, where maintenance and reliability expert and military veteran Eric Bevavino connects with fellow veterans in the industry during each episode, exchanging their experiences and discussing the transition from the military to industry and the resources that led them to where they are today. The Veterans Connected podcast is proudly produced by the industry's leading network and learning community, Mobius Connect. Eric, over to you.
Hi, I'm Eric Bevino, host of the Mobius Connect podcast, focused on connecting military veterans to the maintenance and reliability community. Our aim here is to bridge the understanding gap between the military and civilian worlds, thereby improving the veteran transition experience and ultimately providing hope and a helping hand to any of our brothers and sisters out there struggling to find their way. We'll do this by interviewing veterans who have successfully made it through. For this session, we've chosen to interview one such Army veteran, Joshua Ren Castillo, whose fascinating and patriotic story is a must-listen for anyone interested in joining us on this mission. Hey, Josh. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. Where are you coming from today?
So today I'm here in Washington, D.C.
In D.C. Awesome. Well, we were connected by Lieutenant Colonel Eric Hummel, who is also a guest in this podcast. We had his interview went so long, we had to like break it into two parts, but a lot of content there and a lot of great content. And you come very highly recommended. So how do you guys know each other?
Yeah, so I know Eric from our time at the Defense Security Cooperation Agency, working within the Ministry of Defense Advisors Program. I actually initially met Eric in a supporting his team at Muscatatuck training facility in Indiana, where he was leading. And I guess like the chief of operations of the area of the site, prepping everything for the actual vignettes and the training events. And one thing led to another, and we just started chatting about our experiences in Afghanistan and Iraq and, you know, what we thought was right, according to what we saw.
Right on. Well, in just for the listeners who aren't familiar, maybe didn't listen to Eric's podcast, we might have gone into it a little bit, but what exactly was that training center in Indiana designed to do or to accomplish?
So at the time, the training was designed to prepare Department of Defense civilian employees on how to promote and build capacity within a partner nation's government, and to put them under the stresses that they might actually experience in the field or in a partner's office.
And I understand that was so realistic, according to Eric, and maybe you can confirm this, Josh, that was so realistic that some folks who had come back from theater and were feeling some PTS or some residual challenges, they came in perhaps as a civilian, and it sort of helped them sort of rationalize what happened, and not meant as a therapeutic experience, but actually turned out to be some sort of therapeutic experience just through the nature of the training.
That's very true.
Cool. Is that still going on? Do you know? Is it still up and running?
Since we left Afghanistan, I think maybe the size and scope has changed drastically. And it's probably still more focused on potential partners, like NATO allies or people wanting to join NATO. And then some other countries. Most likely, but I don't think it's as big as it was.
Well, and these are the things that, you know, certainly I don't see or know anything about. I've never been exposed to, and the listeners to this podcast, get a little bit of an inside look or get exposed to things that, you know, you just don't hear about on a regular basis, unless you're involved in. So, well, thank you for doing that. And thank you for your service to our great nation. And you're still serving in that capacity, I suspect, today in some regards. Tell us what you do today. What's your current job?
So now I actually focus on the budget as a budget analyst at the Department of State, where I help basically support, build, and justify the budget for the department, which is a great and amazing experience. And I'll say this is one of the few jobs that I actually can truly say I love. You know, being an infantryman was one of them. This is the second one. Everything else in between, it's just, you know, going through the motions. But, like, I actually love showing up every day to work, logging on the computer and seeing what's next.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. Well, of course, it's only a hop skip from infantryman to, like, budget analyst, right? Financial guy, which, you know, I'm being facetious, right? But how did you make that transition? That's a pretty dramatic transition, but it's interesting that you said you love them both, right? I mean, well, we're all multifaceted, right? But how did you make that transition? I mean, that's what this whole show is about. Like, did you get the idea from somebody, or did it just come upon you? Like, how did that go?
So it was a long transition.
Okay.
Almost 10 years of transitioning, right? So I got out and I was kind of like, wandering around, lost for a while.
And like, what year next? This just for a frame of reference.
So I ended up leaving completely the military behind, National Guard, in 2014. And it took me some time to wander around and figure out what I really wanted to do. And I ended up working at the VA in Phoenix for a couple of years. And that's where I started, like, I guess my passion to where I'm at now. Like, I've always been pretty good with numbers my entire life. But it took me a while to realize, like, this is what it was. And part of that, I know, was, like, changing my mindset and, like, figuring out and developing a plan of where I wanted to be and what that looked like. And that probably took me a good 5 or 6 years to actually, like, finally go, oh, my mind is changing to what's next. You know, let's leave the past the past and let's take the next step. And in that journey, it was like, okay, now I got to start developing my own plans, right? Where do I see myself? Because, you know, in the military, you have, here's A, here's B, here's C, here's D. You kind of know the route you're going to take within your branch or your occupational specialty, right? Once you leave, there's telling you. And you got to find mentors to help you. You got to find bosses that want to see you succeed, which is rare. So I think maybe some point when I was working with Eric at the Defense Security Cooperation Agency, I got tasked with, like, looking at some obscure financial data and was told to figure it out, basically. And I loved it. I'm like, okay, I got it. Like, here's the end result. You need me to figure out all the rest, like, on it. And I think that's really what opened my eyes to, like, okay, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Because even today, like, going through an MBA and working on the finance side of that, it was really exciting. Like, every class I'd show up and, like, okay, what can I build on from my last class? So by the time I graduate, I have, like, a nice little subject matter that I've built on for a year and a half or two, even though it took me 4 years.
No, right on. So you went from wondering in this sort of identity transition, right, and having everything laid out for you in the military context or Department of Defense, which is very good at, like, here's, like you said, 1, 2, 3, ABC, here's where you go next, here's what you do next, here's what you have to do to get to that level. It's very prescriptive, right? And then once you're out, there's really not a playbook. There are a lot of people that can help you, or either claim to help you maybe for a fee, or really want to help you, like a mentor or veteran friend or whatever. But and you came upon this project that sort of lit your fire, and you're like, okay, this is cool, this is new, this is different, it's something I'm interested in. And you just follow that, you follow that path at that point.
And it took me probably a good 2 years or so to realize, like, it's a shift in mindset that you have to make. Like, you still have your drive and your passion. The military got you to this point in life, but now you gotta change. And, like, recognizing you have to change your mindset, I think, helps a lot with the transition of going, okay, that was a great experience that made me who I am today, but here's who I want to be 5 years, and how can I use that past to help me build up instead of
Super.
sticking on this, prior identity? Yeah, like we've all had prior jobs. Let it help you be stronger in the future.
Well, without a doubt, and if you have, as we continue with this interview, if you have advice to potentially shorten that cycle from 5 years to 5 months or a year and a half or whatever, that I think that'll be helpful for our listeners. I mean, I think we all need to go through it, right? Because we develop this identity, and it's steeped in culture and patriotism and process and language and acronyms and all that type of stuff. And really, unless you go directly from the military to a civilian job or contracting that involves a lot of other veterans, you're not going to be speaking the same language, following necessarily the same process or anything like that. And it's an opportunity to help other people get there, but not every organization has the capacity or the financial backing to do all the cool things that the Department of Defense does, right? All these training programs, all these modularized progress, and to really walk people through it. And honestly, very few organizations, probably the smaller you get, the less capable they are, and it doesn't always really apply. So I think what you're hitting on is game changing, valuable. It's a chapter shift in your life, right? It's the next chapter. Can be comfortable with that prior chapter, but you have to build the next chapter, whatever that is.
As you say that, it makes me think that where I recognized that shift and how I recognized it was when I worked at U.S. Agency for International Development.
Oh, USAID. Okay, awesome.
Coming as a combat infantryman into an international development organization where it's all lovey-dovey, let's be all friends. Absolutely, shock to the mind and the system and everything that I knew in the past, like, just been revolutionized. So I'm like, that's where I had my real coming to Jesus moment
Right.
of, like,
Well, you either adapt or you don't survive, right? From
absolutely.
North Pole to South Pole.
And
But related though, right? Because USAID is right out there with the troops. So the troops are like
absolutely.
looking for the bad guys and trying to help make sure nobody gets killed, or at least fend them off, right? And USAID then comes in with, whatever it is, the food and the shelter and the process and whatever. You know better than I do.
So while I was there, I really had a coming to Jesus moment of, like, okay, what do I need to do to be successful around these people? Or where do I want to be here in 5, 6 years? And that's where I really started to look at, like, what does a 5-year plan look like for me? And it took a while. It took a lot of exploring. I would sign up for a lot of events to go check them out and listen. And it took some professional program management courses, some Six Sigma courses, because I thought that's what I wanted to do. So it took a lot of exploring. On my end, and I think maybe in like 4 or 5 years is when I finally realized I'm like, okay, I need to look at this in a whole holistic plan. Like, where do I want to be in 5 years, and what are the things that I have to do now to get to those to that 5 year goal? Because like what I do today is going to get me that to the 5 years from now or not if I don't do those things. And you know, I go back and looking at my time as an infantryman of like, you know, what's the task for the mission? Like, you can look at your mission essential task list, right? Pretty much, if you want to do a direct comparison, like, what are the things that you have to do to be successful?
I love it. I mean, that's very helpful, right? Because if you think that you're starting with a blank sheet of paper and you're coming from the military and you got to figure out for yourself, hearing this, right? Mission essential task list. What do you have to do to get ready so that when you show up, everybody knows what they're doing, everybody's locked and loaded, everybody's, you know, got everything they need. Very similar. So really coming out of the military, you do have that background, that sort of that planning essential background. Whether you created the list or not, you know what the what temp there's a template for success, right? And it sounds like you use that experience.
I did. And I still use it to this day. Like in 5 years from now, you know, I see myself either being an executive somewhere or basically where I am now to help take care of kids, right? Being the dad, being at home and with the family. It's one of those two. I haven't narrowed it down yet. But you know, one of the thing, the other thing I use that help that has helped me and still helps me transition it with bosses that don't really understand my background from the military is, oh shoot, sorry, I'm having a blank. As I ask them task conditions and standards if I don't understand something. You know, if I walk into the office and I'm like, okay, I got my task, but like, when do you need it? You didn't say when you need it, so I got to ask you, when do you need it? Like, who is this ultimately going to be seen by? Is it going to be seen by you or your boss's boss? Who's looking at this? And like the other thing is, what type of format do you need this in? So I kind of still use the task condition standards when I'm unclear with things. And then sometimes, like when I have to delegate task to people, I give them that. Like, these are the expectations, right? And it's bare minimum. And I think that's a great way, like when you transition from the military to the private sector, that you can implement right away. If there's some sort of confusion, you know, task condition standards off the top of your head. Take whatever the boss gave you, fill in the gaps, and then go back and ask for questions. I've never been yelled at once by a supervisor for clarification. I've been yelled at plenty of times for not being clear. But,
Well, hey, this is a great point, right? Because, you know, people come out in any sort of transition. You come out of the military, you're in a different environment, perhaps, you know, even though you may have been through combat, get shot at, and everything, like it's a different sort of intimidation, maybe a different sort of like, hey, I'm a little afraid, perhaps, to ask questions. And, you know, there's no better time to ask as many questions as you can, or you think of as being the new guy, right? Being the new guy on the block. And then even after being the new guy, seeking clarification all the time, because it will keep your butt out of trouble, especially if you run into a boss that is not very organized. Like, you're helping them to become organized instead of being frustrated. You know, that type of thing. But yeah, it's great advice. I mean, always be learning, and it sounds like your curiosity in trying to figure out, you know, clarification, understanding where am I going to go today so I can be there in 5 years. It sounds like that was really key in your progression.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the entire time I keep this military identity too. Like I don't lose it. So like when I meet other folks that are veterans as well, that's our connection, right? Like I can start speaking the same language. Or unless they're Navy, then it's not really the same language, my computer.
Hey, I'm considering myself a veteran of multiple services after doing all these interviews and learning more the terminology. But I'm with you. I'm with you.
But yeah, I keep that identity still with me. And like you said, keeping that new guy, new employee mentality throughout is very helpful. Especially as you move along too, right? It helps you with that transition. Like keep asking the questions. Like now I've been doing my job for about 3 years now, and still I ask questions all the time. 'Cause there's just so much happening all the time. Even if you're working at McDonald's, right? Every day is different. And like, sure, the boss may get frustrated with you, but they probably have some other issues going on. And you taking 10 or 15 minutes of their time to completely understand what is required of you can save the company or the organization hours or hundreds of dollars a day. By just a fraction of your time with the boss for clarification. And
Without
then.
doubt, I mean, things are just changing so rapidly in general, right? Gone are the age of like, hey, I memorize all this stuff in books and I am the oracle or the sage on the stage. And if anybody can stump me, I don't think anybody can stump me because I know all this. Well, everything's on your phone now. Like, most of the answers are there, right? And things are changing rapidly. I think another way to set people apart that I thought about when you were just mentioning that is that being curious may, asking a bunch of questions may irritate some people, but I know it would irritate them more if you asked the same question over and over, right? So
Absolutely.
taking it on board and then moving it to the next level instead of asking the same question, because I mean, I have teenagers and they ask the same questions all the time, and they're a good bounce, backboard for me too, because if I ask the same question, then they give it back to me like, hey, you've already asked this a couple
Yeah, and
times.
you know that comes from part of our experience as veterans too is we can take the abuse too, right? Like if we see the irritation, like yeah, okay, we've irritated people before, but you know what? We'll go away and be happy the rest of the day after 10 minutes of being irritating our boss and maybe getting some sass or something, right? But like that's the mentality that we also bring into the workplace. It's like we can deal with the minor BS for long-term success.
Right on. You can't hurt me because I've been down 240 feet below the surface of the ocean, or in your case, you've been to Afghanistan. Whatever you throw at me is not going to be worse than
Yeah, and
that, right?
I'm glad you brought that up because like I think about that all the time when I'm like going to the more senior executives in the department. People are like, "Oh, are you worried?" I'm like, "Look, nobody's trying to kill me, so I'm all good." So
Right. Hey, I get paid to provide a service and feedback and knowledge and wisdom, right? In this context. And yeah, as long as I do it with respect and they're getting what they want out of me, then I'm in good shape. Yeah, very interesting. Interesting.
And the other thing that like we bring too from our time in service and transitioning to the workforce is we understand what commander's intent is. And it's the same exact thing in the workforce, right? You have the CEO's intent. CEO's intent is to make money or sell the widgets or to increase effectiveness in the organization. And every time you go to work, you're like, okay, commander's intent is this. My job is this. This is how I'm helping the commander or the CEO meet that overarching goal. So, like, you can transition your mindset from the military to the private sector relatively easy and still have a goal and a mission to meet every day. And
Yeah, it's great
it'll
analogy,
click.
right? Yeah, great analogy. Plan of the day, plan of the month, what's the mission? How to, and I think especially if you've been in the military for a little bit, for a while, right, and you've gotten to a place, either junior officer or NCO or even E5s and E6s, right? Well, E6, E7, E8, E9, I mean, anywhere in there, you're helping to translate commander's intent down to the workshop or the individual squad level. Like, how do we fit into this? If we do this, it supports the bigger mission. And that's not always clear, I found, in the civilian world, right? So if you can help do that translation, I mean, that's key to middle management, even though I think middle management is one of the hardest jobs in corporate America or the civilian society, because you're not only taking strategic intent and translating it, but you're making sure everybody's motivated and moving towards the goal. But interesting, yeah, direct correlation there to commander's intent. Fantastic. Yep.
And I hear oftentimes like, oh, well, we're lost when we get out. And I think recognizing the skills you have will help you with that transition. Even though I think I gone through TAPS twice, once like 20 years ago and once like 10 years ago, it they don't really. Oh, and even recently, I talked to a retiring colonel of 06 who was going through TAPS, and they don't really give clear understanding of what the private sector civilian world expects out of you as a departing military member, right? Because these are people that retired and went back to work the next day with a suit on, telling you what the private sector looks like. Oh, college is this, they're gonna love that, and blah, 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 and the civilian side. Just put, artillery captain on your resume, and they're gonna love that you spent, or you were in charge of $8 billion worth of equipment. They're gonna love it. But then when you show up to an interview, they're like, "What's an artillery officer, and what's $8 billion worth of equipment?" And they're just lost because it doesn't really translate to. Hey, how did you help us achieve our sales goal for the month? Or how did you increase operational effectiveness through decreasing errors on the product line, right? So when you go through.
Or even in your case, making, better financial decisions, or finding waste, or finding suppliers or vendors or partners that provide you more for the same promise.
And you like usually it's been like, oh, you're a great leader, get out, and we hype each other up. Like, oh, leadership, leadership. What's leadership sell? Doesn't sell the widget, right? It doesn't transition you to a not leader anymore because more than likely you get out and you're not middle management or junior management or senior management either. You're just some person in the employee number list.
Right, individual contributor, right? Coming out of the gate.
Where I kind of wish sometimes they would be like, hey, this is how you can transition your mindset from being, hey, let's go out and run 15 miles every day, and all you guys are weak because you can't do 15 push-ups, right? To, hey, how do I be more actively engaged in my life and where I want to be and how I want to be.
This is a common theme, and you hit it right on the head, Josh. So there are some emerging programs, Honor Foundation, stuff like that are coming out for select groups of veterans. But a more widespread adjustment, or a broader adjustment to transition training, seems to be needed. I think it's gotten better recently, perhaps, but I mean, it's like you need people who've actually, done it, or spent some time in the pool to come back and say, okay, here's how to get, you know, from one end to the other and, you know, tread water in the deep end and provide that experience. Like, I love, for example, like for people like you and I, right? Or most of the folks that have been on this show. And there are some, there seem to be some, you know, I don't want to call it cottage industries, but some entrepreneurial avenues that have opened up for veterans, from veterans, and, you know, translating resumes or translating your military experience using AI to what job descriptions are. But, you know, at the end of the day, you still need to show up and think right about what's going on, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, part of that that conversation too that most people don't talk about is the financial side. I ended up talking, I was talking to this the same retiring colonel, 06, last year in October, and he was being told that he couldn't negotiate benefits. My eyes opened wider than, you know, you could ever open eyes. And I was like, you can absolutely 100% negotiate everything. And it felt weird, me being a guy that left as an E6, telling this 06 how things actually work. Like, no, you go negotiate 100% of everything you want to negotiate. Like, it doesn't matter if it's non-negotiable or not. If you want to negotiate it, make it your negotiating thing. Let them right tell you. Like, you don't get paid by that company to tell you no. Somebody at that company gets paid to tell you no. So go negotiate benefits. It's like if you're a retiring colonel with, now I think you had like 28 or 30 years. I was like, you don't need health insurance. Go negotiate that in your salary. Look at the average cost of health insurance. If it's $10,000, the company's probably paying like $7,000 or $5,000. Ask for $5,000 more. You know, go in knowing your worth and value. Don't look at the job description and be like, oh, well, they pay $30,000 a year, so that's all I can accept. Like, well, maybe you shouldn't have applied for that job first off because you think it's lower than what your value is. Mm-hmm. So understand your value or the value of your time too as you're transitioning, which is really hard because most people don't think about how much their time is valuable to them. I always, like, when I started looking to it, I said $20 was, I think, my initial, like, value. And this was maybe in 2010. I'm like, okay, for me to do anything, I need like $20 an hour. And then, you know, as I got older and got more experience, it went up and up and up and up. But like knowing that initial value gives you a good starting point. And the other thing I hear too is like, oh, well, I think I can only do this much of that job description. And I feel like veterans, when you get out, if you can only do 70% of the job description, you have the skills and capabilities to figure out the other 25%. Like, I guarantee you something in your background has given you that ability to figure out the other 25%. So don't be scared if you don't know 100%, right? Like, you know you can do it. People know you can do it. Other veterans know you can do it. And it's thinking differently, like switching that light from, oh, I didn't take that qualification course, to like, okay, my qualification course is now figuring it out as I'm doing it. And like, sometimes that's the greatest teacher for the place you're at, figuring it out and doing it.
Right on. Well, these are really wise comments, Josh, really, really wise, because thinking through the hiring process and the decisions and the interviews and stuff like that personally that I've been involved in, both on the interviewee and the interviewer side of the equation, there's always a priority sort of hierarchy in any job description. Like, this is what we must have. Like, this is, and that may only be 25% of the job, right? So if you got that, like, the will to learn and leadership capabilities and being able to show up on time and all that type of stuff. And then there's, so just asking, like on this job description, what is the absolute most important thing, and what are the things that I can, pick up along the way if they don't offer that? If it's a forward-thinking company, or at least a smart company that is interested in taking care of their employees, they should be able to say something like, "You've got what we're looking for. This other stuff you can pick up along the way." But it won't always happen. And you're right. Don't discount yourself off the bat because you don't have X, Y, and Z when, A through the rest of the alphabet was good. So you're good enough to get in there, take a swing, get people to love you, right? And learn who you are, and then you can figure it out.
That really worked with my transition from being infantry to where I am today. I'm like, you know what? This is what I want to do. This is me in 5 years. This is what I want to do. I'm going to make them tell me no. I'm going to apply for everything under the sun that I want to do and make them tell me no. And you know what? I've had an interview where literally I explained, they asked me, they're like, "Hey, why does your job or why does your resume have so many different jobs on it?" And I explained that market rate for what I was doing changed every 18 months. And none of the jobs I had promotion, salary increases. So to stay at market rate, changed the job every 18 months. And these were people that had been at the same place for 20 years that didn't understand why somebody would want to change jobs for every 18 months. It's like, well, I want to be paid my rate, my current value. It's like, I know the value of me as a person, as a human, and I know the value that the market will pay me to do the work that I'm doing. So why should I sit there and say, okay, I got a great job. Let me sit here for the next 20 years making the same rate as the market rate keeps increasing. So.
It's also a very valid point, especially in today's society, whereas somebody who changed jobs every 18 months, 24 months in the past would have been perhaps a red flag on a resume. That's just old thinking, really old thinking. I mean, a lot of the guidance today, and what I would tell my kids when they're looking for jobs, or anybody that I'm working with, would be like, "Hey, it's your life. If you only have a narrow scope of experiences, you only have yourself to blame for that. It's not against the law to have multiple different experiences, especially if the first one you get into really doesn't, light your fire, right?" And in your case, understanding the market rate for your talent set, I mean, that's always important. And if you're in a place where, the only way you get promoted is the next guy or girl above you either resigns or retires, or unfortunately passes away, or whatever the case may be, then there's no future there, right? So you have to weigh your options and see where you go.
And an attitude like that too, it always helps you stay, I think, fresh on what's next. It helps you understand that you need to constantly be transitioning, either at work or at home, right? It's like if you want to be the next great, bicyclist, you got to go home and wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. You take that grit and determination that you had when you were in the military and just transition it to something else that you wanted to do as a hobby. Really, I think the overarching thing is like working on your mindset as you're getting out and transitioning into the civilian world. It'll really, really help. Even though there's like, I think there might be a lot of mental issues that you might be going through, or physical issues might go be going through. Transitioning to what's next, I think, will help mitigate some of the stresses people will be having as they're going to the next step. I don't know if this makes sense, but like getting married, right? You're transitioning from being just you to now two of you. And it's hard. Like, if you're not making that mindset change, that you're not just you anymore, there's you and your spouse.
That's why the divorce rate is 50%, right? Or higher now. But yeah, well, I mean, this is so important, right? We often talk about life transitions and like these big inflection points in your life, which, marriage is one of them, family is another one. But it's really what you're saying, I think, and what you're getting to is that it's a constant. It's not just getting out of the military and the civilian world. Okay, that's a harder transition than some of them, but in order to grow and adapt and evolve, we really need to transition almost every day, right? You're taking smaller steps or maybe even bigger steps at some points to achieve a goal, become a better person, become the best version of yourself, right? So,
And I think what we take out of the military is the resilience to transition constantly. We have what it takes to move from one thing to another. We've seen what hard looks like. Physically, mentally, we've seen it and we've done it and we've overcome and we've strived and we thrived and we've built upon it to be bigger, better, faster, stronger. So when we leave the military, we do have that resilience to go through everything that's hard. Like, if you're sleeping in your car for 6 months, it's just what period of your life? Like, it's been worse. You've probably slept in the woods for 4 days.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I mean, the confidence to overcome and really, could always be worse. And I've seen worse in most cases, right?
And just carrying that resilience through every transitional phase of your life, I think is what we bring out too, because we know we've seen it, we have the drive. And going back to the workplace with that too is like one of the best things that you can get and expect out of a veteran is that drive. You can usually give them the most challenging task, and majority of veterans will take it and run. They're like, well, I wasn't expecting that, but they thrive off the challenge.
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt, and want to be challenged all the
Absolutely.
time. Yeah, be careful what you wish for, right? When that project that few others could handle comes back in better shape in a shorter period of time, then you got to keep coming up with projects and keep us busy and keep us interested, right?
That's probably also the downfall too that you mentioned. Like, as veterans build and then they reach that plateau in the workplace, they expect them to leave. You just gotta expect it. Like, at some point they'll be like, mastered it, got it. Now I'm just here. So they gotta go find the next bigger, better, more challenging thing.
Right on, right on. Well, Josh, we've been sort of really on a continuous flow here, which has been fantastic. So I think our listeners are really going to enjoy that flow. We have about 10 minutes left in the interview, and I want to make sure that we cover this probably really important question for folks who are listening that aren't from a military background but are seeking veterans to hire. And like, what sort of guidance would you share with corporate hiring managers about veterans? We've talked a lot about it so far, but maybe to find the best military fits for the positions they're seeking to fill. What advice would you have, since you've seen it from both sides now, for corporate people looking for vets?
Obviously they're making it to the hiring manager's desk because they have the basic qualifications. I would go ahead and push them and suggest that they ask some more challenging questions during the interview to hear the different responses from the different veterans, because one veteran may fit your organizational culture better than another. So, like, an infantryman is obviously way different than your admin specialist and your food specialist, right? So you need to find that culture, that cultural balance. And we each of our specialties comes with a whole different culture and completely different. But what I would say is take the risk if it's your first veteran hire. And when they show up to your the new manager's job, let the new manager know that if they give them the task conditions and standards for the job, that veteran will be successful. So even though they're paying the salary, if the manager gives that task condition standard for each project or whatever it is they're giving the veteran, that veteran will be successful. They can also rely on that veteran to show up and accept the most difficult, challenging job that nobody wants to do. You know, if it's cleaning toilets and you're like, you tell that veteran that, hey, it's your duty to go clean the toilets, more than likely you're going to have the cleanest toilets you've ever had in your building. And you might keep giving them that duty because they do the best toilet cleaning, right? They've done it before. They know what clean looks like. And probably half of them are scared that you're going to ask them to eat their meal off that toilet seat.
this is a really good point that I don't think has been covered in our conversations thus far. When you say, ask the challenging questions to make sure there's a cultural fit, because veterans are not all the same. I mean, there's infantry, yeah, there's special forces, there's support logistics, admin, cooks, I mean, bordermen, minemen, Navy divers, you know, all, you know, this diaspora of military sort of type roles, right? But so asking about the cultural fit is really important, and asking the tough questions. I mean, don't be afraid of veterans. Like, we're not gonna like go wild and storm out of the room or anything, but ask deep probing questions on making sure that there's a cultural fit. Great question. And then the consistent thing we do all have is the, you know, the tasks and the standards and the requirements, right, of what you want to go do with your mission. So there are some consistent things that people can grab onto, and there are also some nuances amongst the services and amongst the different jobs that people have while they were in the military to sort of flesh out a little bit more and make sure that's part and aligned with the culture. Cause then, you know, they'll stay longer if the culture aligns.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. If you have a culture that is demanding and you need a lot of focus from them, maybe an infantryman's the best for it. Cause we're used to demanding and used to that focus. Or if you have a customer service based culture, maybe an infantryman is not the best person to put in the front line to get yelled at.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. Yeah, because certain jobs require certain things, right? And it's true. And you know, hiring managers know the culture of the company. Well, the veteran doesn't know the culture of the company, right? So that's really, really a sort of a sage piece of advice there that I think will ring true and resonate with everybody.
You know, I think that protects us as in the veteran community too. Because if you hire me and I show up and I'm like, this is absolutely a terrible, insanely terrible fit for me as a veteran in your culture, it's going to make the community look bad because I just quit. And then I'm going to quit and be like, oh, don't go work for blah, 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 because their culture is, you know, X, Y, Z. So don't go work for them. They're just going blah, blah, you know. So it's to protect both the veteran community and the hiring team. It's better just to be like, hey, you know what? This isn't the right culture for somebody with your background or your military experience. Because the last thing we need in the veteran community is, oh, veterans are bad hires because they hired one person that wasn't appropriately cultured for that job.
Yeah, well, we have some positive stereotypes. We have some negative stereotypes, so we don't need any more negative.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I think that would protect some of the the positive ones and decrease the negative ones, because now all you see is veterans coming on board that have like this focus and mindset for success and drive. And then when they leave, it's like, okay, I did a great job, bye. And then everybody's like, oh, that veteran that worked here, great job. They left because it wasn't challenging enough.
Hmm.
So let's find somebody else that looks like that person and bring them on board.
Hmm. Right on. Right on. Yeah. Yeah. Success breeds success, without a doubt, for sure. So, Josh, before we wrap up here, is there anything that we didn't cover today that you'd like to relate to listeners? You know, like coming into this interview, you said, oh, I gotta make sure I say this with Eric to cover off on it, either vets or those looking to connect with them. Anything that we didn't cover today?
Yeah, there's one thing I would like to leave transitioning members or the veteran community with. Look for a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard work on you. It's really hard connecting with mentors, but look for a mentor. Mentors are a fast path to success. Mentors will generally help you overcome all the obstacles that they've experienced. And most likely, they can help you overcome your obstacles as well. They'll guide and navigate and motivate you, but it's ultimately up to you to implement what your mentor says. And having seen and been a mentee and a mentor, absolutely worth the effort to seeing you succeed.
Without a doubt. And is it safe to assume that you would be willing to be a mentor if called upon, as I would?
Yeah, I would even volunteer my wife, as I've done before.
Oh, nice.
Because I think, as I've seen too, there's not a lot of, I think, support for female veterans that are getting out. Like, there's a lot of male support, but I think our female veterans also need that support too.
So your wife's also a veteran?
She's not, but she has 20 years in DOD. So she's
okay, I got you. See, mentorship is mentorship, and
absolutely,
and being married to a veteran. I mean, where I thought you were going with that was spousal mentoring. There isn't, and there probably isn't enough of that either.
No, but, definitely.
Female veterans have a higher suicide rate than male veterans in general per 100,000. Population, right? For lots of reasons we could speculate, but it's hard.
It's very, very hard.
Yeah, fantastic thing to bring up, and I'm sure your wife is a saint, not only for, you know, putting up for with you, but, you know, for trying to help too as well. So fantastic. Well, thank you for that, Josh. And if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best place? Are you on like social media platforms, LinkedIn or anything like that, or is an email like the best way to go about? What do you feel like is best for that? Or through Mobius, they can contact us through the website here as well if they want to get a hold of you.
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn as Joshua R, and you'll see a nice picture of me. And my little banner has a combat infantryman's badge on it.
Nice.
You can email me too. My email is Joshua Rand Castillo, all one word, @gmail.com. Be happy to either reply to you personally or direct you to wherever you're could best find an answer. You know, I'm always willing to help another veteran where I can.
Fantastic. Thank you, Josh. I appreciate that. And, you know, I think one of the things that makes a difference both in mentoring but in just general relating is, you know, the branch of the service that you came from and perhaps the specialty that you were involved in. If people are, you know, infantry or they came from the Army, then they may be more willing to talk to you as a mentor than to me as an AV person, and vice versa, right? So even though most of the stuff is similar, there are a lot of nuances that aren't the same. And, you know, it's just about a comfort factor and being able to relate. So,
yeah.
Wow. Well, Josh, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and help us on this mission. Just a quick note to our listeners that we're seeking both women veterans as well as recently transitioned vets to round out our show. Thank you so much, Joshua, and thank you to Mobius for providing this platform to help both transitioning vets as well as those looking to hire in the field of maintenance and reliability.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Veterans Connected. We'll see you back for another episode very soon. In the meantime, we hope to see you in the Veterans Connected community group, where you can meet Eric and fellow podcast guests and share with other industry veterans at MobiusConnect.com. We hope to see you there.